over WOR Radio 710, The Talk of New York. And here we go with Bob and Ray.
Okay, Lester, and good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Friday here at Bob and Ray Land. Be here until 7.
And it's real summer here in New York right now. It's 70 degrees or so. It's a beautiful day here in the big city. I guess it's pretty nice all over the Northeast.
Did we break the record today? I see we hit 72 in what?
In 1880. Of course, we were just kids then, so I don't remember.
We didn't even know.
So we haven't broken the record so far, I don't think.
Not yet. Well, we're pleased to turn the microphone over to a gentleman who's with us today to offer a rebuttal to a recent Bob and Ray editorial. As you know, we're always delighted to grant equal time to those whose opinions may differ from our own.
Well, actually, it's more that we're delighted to keep out of trouble with the FCC.
Yes.
And that's who says we have to grant equal time to those whose opinions differ from our own.
Yeah, that enters into it, I'm afraid. We do want to issue a warm welcome, though, to this gentleman, brought here under the auspices of the Bob and Ray Public Affairs Department, Mr. Herman Leptov, the national president of the Sons of Bulgarian Immigrants. And I understand that you want to speak out against an editorial we delivered that criticized your ethnic group, Mr. Leptov. Frankly, I don't remember anything we've said that mentioned the Bulgarian people at all.
Well, I'm not surprised that you're trying to weasel out of it. After all, you went to quite a bit of trouble to have it translated into Polish before you broadcast it over your shortwave radio station. It's just too bad for you that we have friends in the Polish community who monitor shortwave.
Well, I think there may have been some mistake here, Mr. Leptov, really.
I bet there was a mistake, and I'm here to rectify it right now, pal. For example, you make that crack there about Bulgaria being an agricultural country that the present government is trying to bring into the 20th century. Now, that remark alone tends to make our parents look like a bunch of backward peasants. And I don't like it a bit.
Well, I can see how that might rub your feathers the wrong way, sir, but actually...
I don't have any feathers, you'll notice, either. And I want to go on record right now as denying any rumor you may be trying to spread about people of Bulgarian descent having feathers.
No, I didn't mean that literally, Mr. Leptov. I was just trying to get into my chief comment, which is that Ray and I don't broadcast editorials over shortwave radio in Polish.
I expected you to issue a denial like that. Now, if you'd be good enough to let me continue, I'd like also to challenge your figures on Bulgarian wheat production.
No.
Claiming a compound annual increase of 8% over the past 30 years only makes the present regime look good, and our older generation look like inefficient farmers.
Mr. Leptov, if you stop to think about it, where would we get figures on wheat production in Bulgaria?
Well, obviously you made them up. That's what I came down here from Lodgepont to point out. And it's interesting that you should confess what you've done before I even had a chance to level the charge. Now, what have you got to say about that?
Well, I don't know. One thing I guess I'd like to say that seems unusual for a person like yourself to live in Lodgepont.
Well, what's that supposed to mean? You don't think people of Bulgarian descent should be allowed to live wherever they want to?
No, it's not that. Just I noticed when you came in that you're barefoot and you're wearing what appears to be the top of an old National Guard uniform together with Scottish kilts on the bottom. Now, I've never seen anyone from Rochmont dresses that way.
Well, the way I dress has nothing to do with the fact that my family came from Bulgaria.
Well, I didn't say there's any connection with that.
Okay, Buster, just see that you don't. I may be an odd duck, but it has nothing to do with my national heritage.
I never meant to imply that it did, sir.
Okay, it's better. I accept your apology. And are you also sorry for saying that Bulgarians shouldn't live in Lodgepont?
Well, if I said anything like that, I certainly would.
Okay, you don't have to go into detail. Just to say you're sorry. And how about accusing my forebears of being inefficient farmers and peasants to boot? You sorry for that, too?
Yeah, I suppose so. Now, I'd like to ask you something. Are you sorry you came barging in here and mistakenly accused us of broadcasting an editorial that we obviously never did?
Did I do that?
Certainly. We're never on shortwave radio, and neither one of us speaks Polish.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to a rebuttal to a Bob and Ray editorial, speaking with Mr. Herman Leptov, president of the Sons of Bulgarian Immigrants. Responsible parties who disagree with the views expressed by Mr. Leptov are urged to contact him directly. Thank you.
Next, Mary Backstage, Noble Wife. The story of America's favorite family of the footlights and of their fight for security and happiness against the concrete heart of Broadway. Having landed in Genoa, our friends decided not to continue on to Milan. Rather, they'll stay overnight at the Hotel Raphael.
And in the grand dining room, we see Mary, Harry, Calvin, Pop, and Greg. We're just been seated as we hear.
Isn't it beautiful here?
Oh, it is.
My goodness.
All of that rococo decoration.
Look at that bread sitting right here at your plate, too.
Boy, this is some fancy place, all right, Greg. You really picked a nice hotel.
Well, it's very nice.
How'd you know about this?
Well, I didn't. It was the, I went to the phone book and was the first one that jumped out at me.
Hotel Raphael, huh? Has a
boy,
ring.
Oh, boy, it's really fancy. And look at these napkins. Aren't they beautiful?
I wonder if we could get some help in ordering. You suppose the head waiter can describe some of the food for us?
Oh, I'm sure.
Well,
Greg, have you been in touch with Milan yet to let them know we're here in Italy?
I thought we'd have a good meal. And then we'd go upstairs and I'd place a call to the opera and talk with who's ever in charge up there and tell them that we're here in town.
Fine.
I got a copy of the evening paper, Barry. Here's your picture on the front page.
Oh, my.
Being pulled out of Genoa Harbor.
Oh, they got a picture of me with all the stuff all over me.
Oh,
my goodness, isn't that? I hope they don't see that back home.
I hope it has the effect you want, Greg.
I'm sure it will. That's the kind of thing that will really fill the opera house.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Kind of an oddity.
Right. Here comes the head waiter. Good evening, sir.
Hello, sir.
Wonder if you'd give us a little assistance in ordering. We're not too familiar with food here.
Being from Rome, I am a pasta man. And really, for me, a great dinner is a small appetizer and then a huge dish of pasta.
Pasta, mm-hmm.
Well, that sounds good.
Well, what is pasta? Is that like oatmeal?
No, it's kind of...
No, it's like your spaghetti macaroni.
Rigatoni.
Vermicelli, ziti, that
macaroni.
Kind of thing.
Sure.
Yeah, I find new sauces.
Uh-huh.
I love rigatoni.
Rigatoni.
It's like a sauce that is incredible, but it's so great.
How do you do it?
So you have a rigatoni.
Yeah, rigatoni.
All right, we'll have that. Well, it'd be five rigatonis with the sauce you recommend.
And then you have a lot of heavy cream and basil.
Ooh.
Fresh basil. Yeah. A lot of fresh basil.
Fresh basil is a
secret. And parmesan cheese.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that sounds good.
Boy, am I ever hungry.
Oh, and sir, don't forget the ketchup.
Yes. When the rigatoni are ready, you just mix them up, and you have the most incredible dish in your life.
Well, it's the way you describe it, it sounds good, but don't forget the ketchup.
And don't forget una bottiglia of vino.
No, that's right. He wants a bottle of wine, and I'll have a bottle. How about you, Greg?
And we all tried it in this place, and they liked it, and I think...
They do, well...
Because we're really Italians.
Yes.
We liked it, I think everybody else will like it.
You sold us, sir.
Yeah, we're convinced.
We're all for it, and we'll have
five bottles of wine. And five rigatonis in that sauce.
Two Bianco and two Russo.
And don't forget the ketchup.
And so our friends prepare for their first meal in Italy, and you want to join us on Monday when we'll hear Greg Marlowe say,
"Hello, hello." They hung up on me.
That's Monday in the next exciting episode of Mary Backstage, Noble Wife. Word Carr speaking. Have you ever had a fish stick and wondered what's in it? Well, with Mrs. Paul's, you don't have to wonder. You know Mrs. Paul's fish sticks are premium quality all the way through. They're carefully made from tender filleted fish and breaded with Mrs. Paul's custom ground breadcrumbs. You wouldn't find anything in a Mrs. Paul's fish stick that you wouldn't use yourself.
Isn't that exciting?
Yes. Just good natural ingredients from Mrs. Paul's kitchens to yours. And that means that you can serve these fish sticks with confidence. But you know Mrs. Paul's fish sticks aren't just delicious, they're quick and easy, too. Takes as little as 10 minutes to fix them. Next time you're shopping, remember to pick up some Mrs. Paul's fish sticks from your grocer's freezer. Serve them often for lunch, for dinner, for snacks or sandwiches, and get ready to hear, "Hey, these are good, Mom." Fish sticks from Mrs. Paul's, because Mrs. Paul's knows good taste comes from good ingredients.
Right. Bob and Ray here with you each day at WOR Radio, the talk of New York. It's 4:30 here with the news now. Roger's giving us. And now, the makers of Einbinder Flypaper, a name you've gradually grown to trust over the course of three generations, invite you to ride with the man of Squad Car 119.
My name's Sam Finch. Me and my partner, Ralph R. Kruger Jr., are the unsung heroes of the police force. We ride a prowl car at night. Sometimes we carry a street map and glove compartment. Other times we forget to bring it along. Either way, we're always on the lookout for trouble. The other evening, we just booked a 211 suspect for committing a 548 when my partner Ralph R. Kruger Jr. turned to me and said,
"Have you got two $10 bills for a 20, Sam? Or will I have to go buy some jelly beans?"
"Well, why will you have to buy jelly beans if I don't have change for a 20, Ralph R. Jr.?"
"Well, I hate to go into a store and ask for change without buying anything, Sam. The clerks always give you kind of a fishy eye."
"Yeah, I know what you mean. I thought you hated jelly beans, though."
"I do, Sam, but they charge you so much now for just a few jelly beans that they're ashamed to squawk when you hand them a big bill."
"Wouldn't it be easier for you if you just asked for smaller bills when you cash your paycheck at the bank?"
"No, I don't like to do that, Sam. When you ask for a lot of small bills, the teller always gives you kind of a fishy eye."
"Yeah, I've noticed that."
"Calling car 119, car 119. Apprehend a burglary suspect fleeing north on a bicycle in the 1800 block of Pico. That's a suspect on a bicycle at 1800 Pico.
1800 Pico block, huh?"
"That's us, Sam. Let's roll."
"Yeah, I guess we'll have to. Sure feels silly using a squad car to chase a suspect on a bicycle, though."
"I know what you mean, Sam. We'll have to turn on the red light and siren, and then bystanders will laugh at us when they see we're only chasing a guy on a bicycle."
"Yeah, that's pretty much the way I see it, too, Ralph R. Jr. The red light and siren always draw a crowd. I sure feel silly when the whole big deal just turns out to be a guy on a bicycle."
"I know what you mean, Sam. And maybe we could park the squad car after we spot him and then chase him the rest of the way on foot."
"I already thought of that, Ralph R. Jr., but it won't work. A guy on a bicycle can go faster than we're able to chase him on foot."
"I guess you're right, Sam. I hadn't thought of that."
"I just thought of it myself about a minute ago."
"I hadn't thought of it at all, Sam."
"Sure, a guy on a bike can go faster."
"Car 119, car 119, disregard that call to pick up a burglary suspect fleeing north on a bicycle at 1800 Pico. The case has been handled by the man of squad car 240. The suspect has been apprehended, booked, and brought to trial. In 1 minute, the results of that trial."
And while we wait to hear the outcome of today's exciting case, here's a word of interest to new parents from the makers of Einbinder flypaper. Friends, we're sure you've heeded the warning of your pediatrician to hang strips of flypaper in the room where baby sleeps. But did you know that only Einbinder makes flypaper in your choice of baby blue or pastel pink? It's true. Now you can protect your infant from hordes of flying insects while you're also decorating the little tot's room in blue for boys or pink for girls. But remember, special decorator flypaper for babies is available only when you ask for Einbinder, the brand you've gradually grown to trust over the course of three generations.
The suspect in that burglary case on Pico was found to have no connection with the burglary. However, he was convicted on one count of riding a bicycle at night without a taillight. Riding an unlighted bicycle is punishable by a term of not more than 1 year in the state penitentiary.
So another desperate criminal is brought to justice thanks to the unsung heroes of the police force, the men who ride the squad cars at night. Now the Auburn Motor Company, maker of fine cars up to but not including 1938, brings you another episode of The Gathering Dusk, the heartwarming story of a girl who's pursued unhappiness despite misfortune. As we look in on the Bessinger household today, Edna is weaving a hearthrug out of old paper clips in the downstairs sewing room. It's early evening, and Mr. Dittenbach, the owner of a small stock brokerage firm in the village, is just arriving.
"Oh, it's you, village stockbroker and security analyst Dittenbach. I hope my urgent call didn't take you away from the office just as you were about to corner the market."
"No, my operation is much too small to become involved in anything like that, Miss Edna. Besides, it's almost 8 o'clock in the evening, and the market's closed for the day now."
"Oh, is that a fact? I had no idea it closed so early. Old Mr. Huhack keeps his market open until 10 o'clock every night now."
"Well, Mr. Huhack runs the food market. I'm talking about the New York Stock Exchange."
"Well, I know, but it seems like a terrible inconvenience for working people who like to do their shopping in the evening. I can't imagine what they would do if they run out of stock before they can get to the market on Saturday."
"Well, the stock market isn't open on Saturday either, Miss Edna."
"Oh?
But, of course, I'll take an order any time and then just put it in whenever the market opens."
"Well, I suppose that would be all right for a family that kept plenty of stock on hand, but I still don't know what happens if you run out completely when the market's closed."
Well, Miss Edna, I don't want to ask a pertinent, impertinent question, but how could a person possibly run out of stock in the middle of the night?
Well, it happened to my father on VJ Day. It was the middle of the night in this country when the Japanese surrendered. All of Daddy's stock in the Tokyo Munitions Company went kaput before he had a chance to get to the market and buy something else.
Well, that's probably just as well. Anybody who bought stock in a Japanese munitions company during World War II doesn't sound like a very shrewd investor.
Well, I suppose that's true, but Daddy always did have a tendency to root for the underdog. He was one of the last season ticket holders the St. Louis Browns had, you know.
No, I didn't know that. But I don't suppose you call me over here just to talk about your father's habit of picking losers.
No, you're right as eight rabbits about that, village stockbroker and security analyst Dittenbach. I've been terribly worried about an investment I made a few weeks ago. The salesman who talked me into it said it was a very big, reliable organization. But I've been reading the stock reports in the paper every day, and I can't even find it listed.
Well, I'll be glad to check on it for you, Miss Edna, and we'll hope for the best. But single women like yourself can sometimes fall prey to an unscrupulous stranger.
Well, I didn't buy this security from a stranger. I got it from Mr. Wendover down at the post office, and I've known him for 40 years.
You bought stock from a postal clerk?
Well, no, it wasn't exactly stock. It was a hot item the post office was selling called government savings bonds. And Mr. Wendover said it was a good investment. But now that I can't find anything like that listed in the stock report, I'm just sure the whole outfit has gone bluey.
Well, I can relieve your mind about that, Miss Edna. The government hasn't gone out of business. It's just that savings bonds have never been listed on the New York Stock Exchange.
Oh, great balls of fire. That possibility never even occurred to me, village stockbroker and security analyst Dittenbach. I just assumed I'd thrown almost $100 right down the tube. Why, you can't imagine what a terrible burden you've lifted from my shoulders. I almost feel as if I'm no longer standing in the gathering dust.
Can it be that the words of reassurance concerning Edna's securities may at last enable her to step through the doorway to happiness? Or will the realization that the post office closes almost as early as the stock market merely lead to further heartbreak? Join us for the next episode when Edna may find that her assets are frozen in the gathering dusk.
And now, more Bob and more Ray and more Radio New York over WOR New York.
Welcome now to another episode of Wing Po, the true-to-life story of a Chinese philosopher who wanders across the American frontier in search of work. As our thrilling drama begins today, Wing Po is approaching a group of men crouched on a bluff overlooking the trail to Canyon City. Suddenly, one of the men rises and speaks.
Hey, why are you poking around here, fella? You looking for a bullet in the head?
I look only for truth and revelation. And in my wanderings, I have never heard wise men say that a bullet in the head is an experience of life to be treasured.
Well, it's an experience you'd never forget. I can promise you that much. So you'd better hightail it out of here while you're still able to.
Your words of advice are worthy of contemplation. For a man whose physical being has been harmed is of no more value than a water buffalo who is broken in spirit. Neither will cross a rice paddy willingly.
Well, if your big ambition is to cross a rice paddy, then you'd better start making tracks to find one.
In truth, my ambition of the moment is solely to obtain work, in order that I may feed my mouth and thereby nourish the rest of me.
Well, I don't think there's any kind of work you could do for us. We're fixing to rob the gold off the stagecoach when it passes by here in a little while.
I find that most interesting, for I once spoke with a wise man who said, "All that glitters is not gold."
Does that mean you can tell us if the shipment's the real thing that we steal?
No, I have never seen gold. I've only spoken about it with wise men. However, I could remain here to observe the horses pulling a stagecoach, for the muscles of their bodies in motion are much like the poetry of the Rippling Brook.
Well, I reckon we could use one more lookout, but you wouldn't come in for a share of the loot. Just $10 cash, that's it.
You are most kind, and my simple needs would be adequately cared for by such payment.
Hey, Deadeye!
Why are you standing here talking to this weirdo and the stagecoach is due any minute?
I beg that you place the blame for dilly-dallying upon my humble shoulders, for it is I who have spoken too long.
I just tricked this fellow into the gang, Ma.
but he's getting a share of the gold. I mean, he's not going to get a share of the gold. Sorry. I'm just going to give him $10 flat for watching the poetry of the horses.
True, for it is like the rippling brook.
Watching what about the horses?
It's not difficult to explain.
Now, you better let me do the explaining, fella. Ma doesn't cotton much to strangers wearing kimonos. Now, you see, Mar, when a horse runs fast pulling a stagecoach, he writes poetry with his muscles. And this guy's going to keep on the lookout for it during the holdup.
If it should not appear like the rippling brook, I shall say so.
Well, this is just about the nuttiest thing I ever heard of. Here we are all set for a big job, and this clown wants to hang around afterward and watch the horses write poetry.
What you describe is not precisely the intent of my study.
Well, I don't care what you want to study. I'm not going to have you underfoot doing it here. Now, you pick up your skirts and clear out before I shoot that dress of yours full of polka dots.
No, please. I must not permit you to resort to violence on my account. So I shall move on. Well, that is my destiny. I'll see you around.
And so our hero wanders down the trail in quest of his next thrilling adventure. Be sure to join us soon for more incredible excitement in the life of Wing Po.
Once again to this place for heroes, dramatizing events in the lives of ordinary citizens who have dared to fight against corruption and evil without giving thought to their own personal safety. Today's dramatization tells the heroic tale of brilliant young basketball star Slats Muddleman, and we'll be meeting the real Slats Muddleman right after our story.
And so there's no doubt that you did the right thing in reporting this thing to me, Slats. It's serious business when a star athlete gets a phone call from notorious gambler Bullets Boxwood the night before a big game, and having bullets threaten to break all the bones in your feet if you don't let our opponents win is, well, it's something to think about, too.
Well, I'm not really worried, Coach. After all, Bullets didn't mention laying a finger on any of my beloved teammates. It's only me that he seems to be after.
Yes, and that's why it's fortunate that you told me about the call, Slats. Now I can just keep you on the bench for the big game and let your replacement take over. No threats have been made against him.
But, Coach, my replacement is a clumsy ox. He'd cause us to lose the game for sure. Other guys have been depending on my great talent and natural ability to carry them to the championship. So you can't keep me out tomorrow. It'll break their hearts.
Slats, it's only a game. And if we lose it, nothing is really at stake except my future coaching career. Your personal safety comes first.
Coach, I appreciate your willingness to sacrifice everything for me, but letting my untalented replacement start in the big game would be playing right into the hands of a cheap crook like Bullets Boxwood. We'd lose, and that's what he wants.
I know, Slats, but it's only a game, and if we lose it, nothing is really at stake except my future coaching career.
I think you mentioned that before, Coach, but you're wrong. There's a lot more at stake than the outcome of a basketball game. There's decency and honor, and all the kids scattered across America who look up to me as their hero.
Oh, they'll get over it, Slats. Your safety is all that matters now.
No, no, you're wrong again, Coach. If you once give in to a creep like Bullets Boxwood, that's only the beginning. He'll know you're running scared. Next, he'll demand that you shave points in every game. Then he'll be cutting himself in for a share of the gate receipts. Before long, he'll own the entire university and every student in it.
Maybe, maybe. But right now, your safety is all that matters.
Don't worry about me, Coach. I've met a few swine like Bullets Boxwood before in my young life, and they're all talk with nothing to back it up. That's why I want to start in the big game and play my heart out. I know Bullets is bluffing, and I'm calling his bluff.
The day of the big game dawned, and Slats Muddleman not only played for his team, but scored an unbelievable 51 points. Needless to say, the crooked gamblers lost millions of dollars, thanks to the heroism of one young man. And now, we want to pay our tribute to the real Slats Muddleman. Come on out here, Slats.
I'll be right there. Just takes a little while when I have to walk on my hands like this.
I gather that you're still having trouble with your feet.
Yeah, they're a lot better than they were. But of course, it's only been 3 years since I last played basketball. A person has almost 60 bones in each foot. so it'll take several more operations before I'm good as new again.
Well, I know you're looking forward to that day. You've already gotten $1 million bonus to sign a professional basketball contract.
Yeah, but that contract required me to be ready for the 1974 season. So now the team is suing to make me give back the $1 million bonus, and since I've already spent the money on medical bills, I just don't know what I'm going to do.
Well, whatever you do, I'm sure it'll be the right thing, Slats.
Yes.
You've already showed that you're a man of great courage and character. You're a hero, Slats Muddleman, the very kind of hero we've been proud to honor here on This Place for Heroes.
Marshies, the great new cereal that gets soggy even without milk or cream, brings you another exciting story of adventure starring Tippy the Wonder Dog. As we look in on the isolated cabin of Grandpa Witherspoon today, we find that the worst blizzard in years has buried the valley under a blanket of snow. Gramps is huddled under the covers on his cot as he already begins to show the first symptoms of cabin fever. Meantime, little Jasper stands in the front window, staring out at the vast white emptiness. Suddenly, the boy turns and speaks.
Ah, that big snowstorm sure has created a vast white emptiness, Gramps.
Yeah, consarn it all. I know there's nothing out there but a vast white emptiness. That's why I'm hoping that fool dog of yours gets back soon with the snowshoes we need to walk out of here alive.
Ah, there's no need to have a moment's concern about that, Gramps. Tippy's made a specialty out of saving us from natural disasters. So I'm sure he'll be along momentarily. Tippy's the noblest, the smartest dog in the whole wide world.
Well, what's taking him so long, then? Sent him out for those snowshoes as soon as we got the first storm warning and the radio, and that was around the end of November.
Well, you know how it is, Gramps. Even after Tippy has made his selection and given the clerk his credit card, there are all kinds of forms to fill out and be signed. And I'm sure old Tip's expediting matters to the best of his ability. He's the dandiest, the smartest, the... Oh, ahoy! I think I see him out there now, Gramps, floundering through the deep snowdrifts to save us again.
Here, Tippy, Tippy, Tippy!
Consarn it all, don't slam that door. Boy, any little noise could start an avalanche that'll bury this whole cabin.
I'm sorry, Gramps. The danger of being crushed to death under tons of snow momentarily slipped my mind. Also, that wasn't Tippy I saw out there. It was just the Watson's Beagle headed home with a cord of firewood to heat their place until the bottled gas truck can get through again.
Every other dog in the neighborhood can be called on to do his part at a time like this, but that fool Tippy's probably just crawled into a hollow log someplace and gone to sleep.
Aw, gee whiz, Gramps. I don't know why you always pick on Tippy every time your life's in deadly peril. These frequent disasters aren't his fault. He's the keenest, the smart... Wait, I see him out there now.
Here, Tippy, Tippy, Tippy!
Concern at all. If you jar all that snow loose up on the cliff, we'll never know what hit us.
Sorry, Gramps. I forgot again about that awful peril we're facing. In addition, that wasn't Tippy out there after all. It was just that new puppy that hangs around the Miller place. He was headed up that way with a length of rope and some mountain climber's hooks.
Yeah, that pup's barely old enough to leave its mother, but it's already able to go on simple errands I'd never trust to that fool Tippy.
Aw, Gramps, I don't know why you start to whimper and blame Tippy whenever you face imminent calamity. It's not his fault if you always go to pieces in a crisis. He's the grandest, the smart... Wait, I see him out there for sure now, battling his way through mountainous snowdrifts to deal with the situation.
Come on in, Tippy. That's a good boy. Right, Doggy.
Sorry, Gramps. I'll try not to forget that again.
Consarn it all. Never mind that now. Just give me a pair of snowshoes quick so I can strap them on and get out of here before it's too late.
Oh, I hardly know what to say, Gramps, but that doesn't seem to be what Tippy brought home from the store. See, it's a set of old-time American flags to display during the bicentennial.
I'm going to teach that fool dog a thing or two.
No, no, wait, wait, Gramps. Don't you see the wisdom of what Tippy's done? He knows we can't hope to get out of here on our own without the snowshoes he neglected to bring. So, he got these flags for us to use as a semaphore and wigwag for help.
Hey, hey, boy, oh boy. Yeah. Did I tell you, Grass? Timmy's the wisest, the smartest dog in the whole wide world.
Next news as it happens, next scheduled news at 6:30 with Roger Skibinus. Over WOR Radio 710, the talk of New York. Back we go to Bob and Ray.
Let's say hello to some of our audience here. Nice-looking group of people. Wonder if I could have your name, sir.
Oh, come on, Charlie. You remember me.
No, I don't believe I do. My name is not Charlie.
Well, I know you changed it when you went on the radio, but I knew you and you were still just plain old Charlie Diefendorfer back in Kansas City.
Oh, no. I'm afraid you made a mistake, Fred.
Ah, come on, Charlie. Don't try to hi-hat me. You remember Fred Eichenwald, third-year Spanish?
No, sorry. I don't think we've ever met.
Sure we have, Charlie. We double-dated together at the senior picnic. You took that skinny Fenneman girl, and she ate all the hard-boiled eggs, and you got mad and pushed her in the river, remember?
No, I don't. I'm sorry. I think you really...
I'll never forget the look on her face when she climbed out of the water with that big floppy hat she was wearing.
Yes, well, it's been good talking to you, Mr. Eichenwald.
Good to see you again, Charlie.
Let's move over to this lady. That happens every now and then. I don't know. Maybe I look like somebody else. Could I have your name, ma'am?
Ms. Fern Shopley, Red Wing, Minnesota. But back home, everybody just calls me the Creeping Arbutus Lady.
You have some physical characteristic that makes them all call you that?
Land sakes, no. They call me that because I always carry a few packages of Creeping Arbutus seeds around with me.
Uh-huh.
And plant them wherever I go. I like to brighten up the world with a little greenery.
Oh, that's a nice idea. How'd you ever happen to think of such a thing?
Well, I really picked it up from my first husband, Emery. He went around planting lemon trees. Of course, none of them ever grew because he planted them all up there in Minnesota. Emery was an awful fool.
He did give you the idea for planting Creeping Arbutus, though.
That's right. And you'll notice I've planted some seeds along the baseboard there.
It's like a couple of them are ready to sprout.
So they are. The fluorescent lights bring them out.
That's all.
Better stand back. Once they start to creep, they move pretty fast.
They do seem to be growing fast. One of the vines already gotten caught on the mic cord.
Watch out now. Another one's starting to curl around your ankle there.
Really, truly amazing, friends. And Miss Shopley, one of the vines is starting to grow right up your back.
Oh, it's starting to wrap itself right through.
You'd never believe this if I didn't see it for myself.
This happened once back in Fergus Falls. Quick, get my scissors out of the knitting bag.
I don't see any scissors in there, Miss Shopley.
This is terrible. I must have left them at my hotel.
Oh, I'm sorry things have turned out this way, but it's been nice to talk to you.
Been lovely being here.
And up to Ray on the great stage.
And once again, we're visiting in the basement of Fred Falvey, the do-it-yourselfer. Fred, when I came in, I noticed a big paving machine out in the back there. Is that some part of a new project you're working on?
Yes, I hope to get around to it next week sometime, Ray. I'm going to pave the whole yard and then paint it green.
I thought of that.
Give the appearance of a well-kept lawn without all the work involved in mowing it.
So this is just another example of better living by doing it yourself, huh, Fred?
Yes, it's going to be another example of better living by doing it myself.
Well, I'm sure all of our home handymen and our audience are anxious to hear the do-it-yourself tip that you plan to pass along today.
Today I'm going to demonstrate how to make light bulbs. Ray, you know, the light bulb is a big item in every family's budget, though very few craftsmen realize that they can be made right at home in the basement workshop.
Well, I can see how light bulb making would be a valuable skill to know. So what is the first step, Frank?
Well, first, of course, you have to have the metal base. I don't refine my own metal for that. I just buy the strips and run them through the press. If you wait a minute, I'll show you.
And a perfect light bulb base comes out of the press with the threads right in it, ready to go into the outlet.
That's right.
Nice.
That's all right as it comes out. It's just ready to use.
I imagine that press is a pretty expensive piece of equipment, isn't it, Fred?
Well, I only paid $800 for this one. I got a price on it because the bases, it turns out, don't fit any socket that's been in production for the last 30 years.
Okay. All right, what do you do next?
Well, you glue this little glass rod to the inside of the base, like I have one already set here, and I let it dry overnight. This way, we won't have to stop and continue the demonstration tomorrow.
I see. Then I suppose you install the filament next.
Right. The filament is made out of refined tungsten wire. Now, you can buy this stuff at any tungsten house, and I just loop it around here like this, and then cross here like this.
Let me just point out that Fred has looped the tungsten around the glass rod, and that's where the electricity passes through to make the bulb glow. Is that right?
That's right. Oh, we have to put the glass covering over the whole thing first, though. I make the globes with a regular children's glass-blowing outfit, and I've adapted it myself for turning out frosted glass. Explaining how I did that is much too complicated to go into right now.
Well, I imagine any do-it-yourselfer could figure it out anyway.
I rather doubt it. At any rate, I set the frosted globe over the metal base, leaving just enough room for this rubber hose to fit in between. You'll notice that the hose runs over to an ordinary household vacuum cleaner.
And I presume the idea there is to create a vacuum, is that it?
The idea here is to create a vacuum inside the bulb. The thing will only work inside a vacuum.
So you turn the vacuum cleaner on and suck the air out. And then you pull the hose out and clamp the bulb onto the base real quick before any air can leak back in. Here, I'll demonstrate.
And there we have it, a completed light bulb made, I imagine, at a fraction of what you'd pay for the same thing in a store. Is that right, Fred?
I turn these out for less than $3 a piece. Of course, I have a friend who gets the tungsten for me wholesale.
But in any event, it's just another example of...
Sometimes it does that. If you don't get a perfect vacuum, nothing to worry about.
I'm just going to say it's just another example of better living by doing it yourself. And we've seen it here in the basement workshop of Fred Falvey, the do-it-yourselfer.
Down the corridor and across the drawbridge, and here they are.
Oh, my goodness. It is Friday again.
Boy, these Fridays do roll around.
They do roll by quickly, I'll say that.
The sounds in the background are those made by the Bob and Ray on a guard as it prepares to close the studio for the weekend.
Pausing this is a ceremony that you should, if you're ever in New York, be sure and see. The closing of the Bob and Ray studio for the weekend.
Just right. Address passing over the keys ceremony. Bob and Ray. Want to thank our staff for all of their help this week. Our producer-director, Bob Tiley, and our engineering force, Herb Squire, Bonnie Beck, Ed Beatty, Jim Quotamine, and Art Pompain.
So have a good weekend, everybody. We'll see you Monday at 4:15. Bill Van Ray Goulding reminding you to write if you get work.
Bob Elliott reminding you to hang by your thumbs.
Pass off the cage by the center. Quick, box!
Goodbye.